about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Rich Strolis, and he'll be answering your most important questions on streamer strategies. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Rich a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc. doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Rich Strolis about streamer strategies. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 31 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging on to their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. Before we introduce Rich, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Rich's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado, and you'll be able to redeem that certificate either in-store or online, as they have an online store as well. Find out more about Front Range, go to frontrangeanglers.com, frontrangeanglers.com. Now, here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something Rich and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name, your location, and the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and type fast, and maybe you'll win that $25 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers. Tonight, our guest is Rich Strolis. Rich is passionate about all things fly fishing. He always strives for something fresh and outside the box, running the gamut of simple to complex patterns, merging natural and synthetic materials together. Known mostly for his years guiding the Farmington River, he now spends his time at the Vice tying orders or publishing videos to his catalog of tying tutorials. Rich is a pure subsurface fanatic who loves to chase trophy trout with large streamers and nymphs. A pack fly designer, custom commercial tire, Rich has been fishing for over 30 years with 25 years of tying experience. Rich believes that a great deal of his experience and success is a direct byproduct from his time spent on the water on various rivers and streams across the lower 48 in Alaska. Prior to kids and family, he spent 200-plus days a year on the water before and after work. Yes, that is correct. He has a full-time career on top of all this. Can you say a type A to the core? Rich loves sharing his efforts with everyone, and he enjoys tying flies almost as much as fishing them. Some of his creations have appeared in the pages of Fly Fisherman Magazine, Eastern Fly Fishing Magazine, Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, Orvis Fly Fishing Blog, Global Fly Fisher, Hatches Online, and books by noted aquatic insect photographer Thomas Ames. He is also a member of the Regal Vice Pro Staff, Hatch Reels Pro Staff, Clear Cure Goo Pro Staff, and Performance Flies Pro Staff. When not filling orders or being creative, he teaches classes on fly tying for various degrees of difficulty, as well as runs clinics on various techniques to improve angler's techniques through various fly shops and clubs around the Northeast. Rich, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hi, Roger. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on board here, and we've got some great questions for you tonight. And as always, our audience comes through and comes up with some sometimes very specific questions about our topic, and tonight we've got a few of those. Streamer fishing, I think, is something, you know, everybody's interested in and always wants to know more about, so this will be fun. Hold on just a second. Sorry, folks. As you know, a couple weeks ago I had a terrible cold and had to cancel a show. Well, there's still remnants around, so if I talk too much, I got to kind of clear my throat out. So if I go pause like that, you'll know what's going on. And also, it looks like we got our technical difficulties squared away from last week and with our teleconference company, so they fixed the problem, and hopefully you all can hear me right now. And just to make sure you can, could somebody type in, yes, I can hear you, just to make sure, since I'm a little paranoid about that after last week. So anyway, with that out of the way, and oh, by the way, we will have Ralph Cutter back on not the next show, but the show after. So we will do that show eventually and have Ralph back. So, okay. Well, Rich, let's get into our questions. And, oh, boy, we've got a bunch of them coming in online as well already.
Good.
And let's see here. So starting out, let's talk about streamer fishing in general. Who are some of the people that have influenced you along the way, and how have they shaped how you fish today?
There's quite a few, actually. I mean, there's some pretty obvious ones. Obviously, Kelly Gallup. I was fortunate enough to meet him at a show probably about 10 years ago. And, you know, he's a very common name that everybody's pretty familiar with nowadays. So I don't really need to talk too much about what he's kind of done for the streamer situation. He was definitely influential with me because he really got me into looking at, you know, streamers that are articulated, much larger than your single hook style flies. Some of the older people that didn't have a direct influence on me, but I liked their style and their creativity, were people like Kerry Stevens from the Rangeley area of Maine. That's something that really, that whole era of streamer fishing, kind of how I got started with some of the flies that I started to fish with when I initially got fly fishing. There was a guy that you probably wouldn't associate with streamer fishing too much. He was kind of local from around my area. His name was Dave Goulet. He used to own a fly shop in the area, and he didn't so much as much influence me in my streamer fishing, but he influenced me a lot in how I designed flies and how I got into fly tying. So he was a huge part in how I kind of broke things down when I really got into the fly tying side of it. And then there's a few other people too, which are probably more modern known guys now that are friends of mine that I fish with occasionally that I bounce ideas off of. One of which would be Mike Schmidt from out in Ohio. We talk daily. We kind of think about fly design and streamer fishing very, very much the same, albeit though I think we both kind of have different ideas that we kind of meld together. And like I said, Kelly and Bob's book really kind of changed my way of how I started fishing, and I've kind of built upon that. So
right.
Those are probably the biggest influences.
Right. Kelly, in fact, we did one of the first shows we did on streamer fishing was with Kelly Gallup, so folks want to hear Kelly talk about streamers, they can go into our archive and type Kelly Gallup or streamers and listen to that show. It was very good, very good show. So I know he can have an influence. And Kelly's a great, dynamic guy, a good person to learn from. So what is your, you know, do you have an overall philosophy about fly fishing with streamers?
Absolutely. I teach a class, a streamer class that's gotten pretty popular in my neck of the woods, and I'm kind of branching out with that. I'll talk about it a little bit later. And my philosophy on streamers is this. I look at my streamer fishing a little differently than some guys do. For me, it's a 100% commitment to fishing these style of flies and a bunch of different techniques. When I say these style of flies, I'm talking larger flies. A small fly in my book, when I talk about my streamer selections, is under 4 inches. A larger fly or a medium-sized fly would be in the 5.5 to 6 inch range, and big would be 7 inches and up. And I'm talking about fishing for trout. I'm not talking about warm water species. I base most of this around trout, although a lot of this can cross over not only to warm water fishing, but saltwater too. And my goal is, my thought process is kind of like your trophy buck hunter. You got a guy that, say, I have a good friend of mine that's an avid bow hunter, and my thought process kind of goes the same as his. He likes to hunt trophy bucks. I like to hunt trophy browns. In order for me to hunt trophy browns fishing the way that I like to, which is with streamers, I have to have a different mindset. And my mindset is I have to be comfortable with the fact that, you know, on any given day, I may go out on the river and I may take the ungracious donut. And the donut is I may go home empty-handed, but I have to be fine with that, and I am absolutely fine with that. Now, more often than not, I don't go home not catching anything, and I don't always base my successes on how many fish I catch. It may be I might have located a large fish, might have turned a fish, learned something new from the techniques that I put out on the river that day. And that's kind of like how I approach my streamer philosophy, is I'm going out there not for fish. I'm going out there for the fish. And although you don't always get the fish, you're lucky if some seasons you may get one or two that might fall into that parameter for you. But that's the mindset, and I'm okay with not going out there and not catching numbers. I mean, I talk about it. It's funny because a few people have taken my class. The very first slide of my class shows a picture of a net with two trout in it, two moderate-sized 12 to 14-inch fish. And I tell people straight up, I go, if you are taking this class because you want to fish streamers to catch numbers, I'll gladly refund your money, and there's the door, because that's not what this class is about. It's about fishing for trophy fish. Not to say that a lot of these techniques will not catch numbers, because some days they do, but when you start delving into the realm of fishing larger stuff, you're going to weed out a lot of those smaller fish. So that's kind of like my philosophy. I mean, it's kind of like my friend Tori tells me, like, you're swinging for the fences, like you're getting up there every time with a home run swing, and that's kind of the philosophy I kind of taken upon.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And, you know, after you've caught a lot of fish, then you can change your approach and your mindset like you have and say, hey, you know, I'm going to go for something really special, and I think that's great. So that, my next question was going to be, what sets you apart from other streamer fishing? Obviously, that does. Are there other things that set you apart from other streamer fishermen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what goes hand in hand with that, and I think, you know, Kelly in Bob's book really put, and especially Kelly's videos, I mean, he changed the way a lot of us fish streamers, hands down. And he changed the way a lot of us have pieced together, you know, our outfits, the types of lines we fish, our fly selections, etc. I've kind of built upon that a little bit, and I'm not saying that this is something that I've completely come up with myself, because that's not really the case. I've kind of picked and choose things from here and there from all different people in the industry and fishermen, and put together some things that work for me. And I think what sets me apart from a lot of other streamer fishermen is, I think now in this day and age, a lot of streamer fishing is strictly equated to strictly integrated sinking lines, you know, a lot of unweighted flies, you know, there's moderate amounts of weight built into it, where I think that in a lot of situations is very effective, and it is a style and method that I do like to fish. I kind of built upon that, and I do fish a lot of large streamers on floating lines with standard types of leaders where the flies are weighted, and they're used in different scenarios, and I think there's definite pros and cons to both methods, but I think I fished a lot last year. I'll give an example. In the Northeast, we were struck with drought-like conditions, which for most people who equate to streamer fishing, they don't really equate really good success to low water conditions. And I've always been the kind of guy that's like, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to try and prove you wrong. So I kind of took it as a challenge the last couple seasons. We've had lower water. So I said, you know, how can I go out there? And I really enjoy, there's nothing better than getting a nice fish on a large streamer or watching a fish turn. That's the ultimate excitement for me. So, you know, how can I still have success under those types of conditions fishing the way that I like to fish? And that's where I really started delving into a lot of the floating line techniques, fishing weighted flies or some moderately weighted flies, and larger flies than most people would think under those types of conditions with resounding amounts of success. So it can be done, you know, and I think that's what sets me apart. I like to...
Okay.
Kind of mess around with little different things, you know?
Sure. Well, let's talk about equipment a little bit. You mentioned lines already. Duke in New York asks, what is your opinion on rod selection for streamer fishing? What type of rod, action, length, stiffness do you prefer for your type of streamer fishing?
That's kind of, for me, it's a two-part question, and I'll tell you why. I think you need to, you know, any good fisherman should be able to fish with any, you can put any kind of rod in their hand, and they should be able to, you know, accomplish what they need to accomplish within reason. When we fish with streamers, though, we're talking a lot of times larger flies. You might need something with a little more backbone. So there's definitely some differences there. I'd say I typically like a 9-foot rod. I think you have a lot of control with a 9-foot rod. Some people like to go a little bit longer. Most of the time, I think you can cover most of your situations with a 9-foot 6-weight. That's medium fast to fast action. Like I said, 9-foot. When I start getting into bigger streamers, anything over 7 inches, it's going to put a lot of pressure on a 6-weight rod, and you'll hear me talk about 8-weight rods. I will fish nothing but an 8-weight with a lot of the larger streamers that throw, because it's not so much that it's the size of the fish that I'm targeting, it's basically using that size rod so that I can get the proper, you know, manipulation out of the fly when I fish it through the water column, and also so I won't break the rod, because a 6-weight, you're kind of pushing it to the limits with some of the larger streamers, especially if they're very wind resistant. So when I say it's a two-part question, It's kind of based upon what I'm going to be fishing for that day.
Okay. Okay. So to extend on that, Duke also asked, you know, about reels and line and sink tip and so forth. So anything in particular in a reel that you like for your type of fishing, or does it make any difference?
I really don't think it makes much of a difference as long as it's got, you know, I'm real big on, like, you know, large to mid-arbor reels. I think those help out, you know, faster retrieve. And you can put, with a mid-arbor reel, you can put a little bit more backing on if you have to. But a lot of times when we're fishing, a lot of the equipment that we use, we're fishing heavier leaders and stuff. So, you know, you can crank down on a drag. You can get a large fish in relatively quickly. So, you know, it's more a matter of personal preference, but I do like something that is a little bit larger, has a little bit more capacity. I like something that I can switch out fairly easily as well, too, because I do fish two different types of lines when I'm streamer fishing, and I always have them with me at all times. So, and to the lines would be, I like some sort of an integrated sinking line, not a full sinking line. Basically, if people aren't familiar with an integrated sinking line, Jim Teeny kind of popularized them. Kelly's kind of built upon that with his Lines Through SA. In a nutshell, it's you have a section of line that has an aggressive sinking head on it, anywhere from, you know, shorter end could be 8 feet up to 40 or 50 feet long, and then it tapers into a welded running line, which is either an intermediate section of line that runs right down to your backing or floating or a combination of the two. And then I always have a weight forward floating line with me as well for any of my floating line specific techniques.
Okay. We did have a couple of questions, both from Darren in Grand Junction, Colorado, and Joe in New York about they were asking about the rods and so forth, too, and lines, but also about, you know, where do you go from the end of that line? What's your leader and tippet setup, and how does that change from your two different setups?
Would you like me to finish that question, too? As I noticed on here, the type of streamer lines that I like right now, if people are interested in, like, brands, I know a lot of people are really hot on brands.
Sure.
I'm very big on the airflow lines. I fished all of them. The sinking integrated sinking lines that I use right now are the Streamer Max by Airflow. I think, hands down, for the style of fishing that I do, they're fantastic. They're very front-loaded. They have a very interesting 10-foot section in them that's intermediate, and it's about two diameters thicker than most lines, and then it goes into a floating running line. It kind of works like if anybody out there fishes Skagit style with two-handed rods, the line is set up just like a Skagit setup. You have a very aggressive sinking portion, a much thicker intermediate transition zone to the running line. And that line, hands down, turns over some of the biggest flies with ease. I really like that line a lot. And for a floating line, I'm big on their 40-plus distance lines. They have that, or if you're in a pinch, if there's any nip fishermen out there and you have any of the Rio indicator lines are great too, because they have a very aggressive weight forward head and they can turn over big flies on a fairly stout leader as well. Which leads me into the leaders.
Right.
I have a different mindset on leaders, and I've kind of borrowed this a lot from a bunch of different people. Some of the first leaders that I read about when it comes to fishing on a sinking line were always like, you know, cut a section of, you know, 15 or 20 pound test, keep it kind of short, under 3 or 4 feet, and just attach that to your sinking line. I think that works really well if you have a smaller fly that's less wind resistant and not too bulky, but once you start delving into flies that are over 5 inches long, you know, they might have some weight in them. They could be very wind resistant. You're going to have a difficult time turning that over, even if you're an excellent caster. And there's nothing worse than, you know, when you're trying to get your fly right where you want it to go, whether it's dropping it within inches of a bank or into some structure, and at the end of your cast, that leader just collapses. So I still do build tapered leaders for my floating line setups and all of my sinking line setups. And they're usually fairly stout. They'll start anywhere from 45 to 40-pound test, and they'll taper down to 5 to 10-pound increments, down to 15, sometimes 20-pound to my fly. Obviously, for the sinking line sections, they'd be much shorter. I still do keep them short, under 4 or 5 feet, typically around 3. For my floating line setups, anywhere from 6.5 all the way up to a 10-foot leader. Same kind of taper.
Okay, let's take a quick break here, Rich, and then we'll come right back. And there's some more questions online here that came in, so we want to make sure we catch those. So we'll be right back. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's www.keeney.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rich Strolis about streamer strategies. If you'd like to ask Rich a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Rich, we got another question from Joe in New York. He says, big streamers can put a lot of twist in lines and leaders. Have you used micro swivels in your leader setups to solve this problem?
For streamer fishing, I haven't. For nymph fishing, I have. So I can't say that I have. You know, if you cast a lot and you're not very good with line management, which I'll be the first one to tell you, I let my line just float right in the river as I go because I kind of just really, you know, dial into what I'm doing and just kind of cover water. You're going to find that your line's going to twist, absolutely. So I just periodically throughout the day, depending on how long I'm out there fishing, I just try to take a time every once in a while where I just try to stretch out some of my line. But, no, I don't really have any experience fishing with furled leaders or swivels in that respect, so I couldn't really give you a good answer on that.
Okay, yeah, that was the next question coming up. Dan in Hackettstown, New Jersey, want to know about furled leaders with swivels. So no experience with that. Okay, good. Oh, and this is kind of an unusual question, but Tom in Greensburg, Virginia, want to know, you know, if you can fish streamers effectively with Tenkara equipment.
Geez, you know, I mean, you might. I don't know. I'm not really well-versed in Tenkara, to be quite honest with you. So I've never fished Tenkara. You know, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's not something that I could say that I could give you a definitive answer on it. But, I mean, maybe you can, maybe you can't. I don't know. I'm probably not the right person to ask that question.
Yeah, and we did a show on Tenkara that people can look up in the archive. I think with the way that the rods are structured and so forth, I think it would be difficult to present large flies with Tenkara equipment. It's more designed for small stream. Can be used in larger streams, but you're limited by the length of the line since there's no reel on the rod. But you could do a lot of swinging, you know, with streamers. Maybe you could do it with smaller streamers, but certainly I don't think with, like, you know, 4 to 6 inch streamers.
Yeah, I think the Tenkara rod would probably have some problems with that.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's made, I think, for lighter weight fishing. But okay, so let's talk about flies, because you spend a lot of time designing flies. Where do you come up with your ideas for your streamer designs?
You know, I mean, this day and age, there's just, the Internet is huge, and you get, everybody is borrowing ideas and concepts from one another. I think, from a tying perspective, I think we're kind of like in a little bit of a renaissance, because there's so many people out there now at the result of the Internet that are sharing stuff or picking up things from other places, and there's not a lot of fresh things out there. I think we're all kind of borrowing bits and pieces from one another. And I can honestly say, me personally, I have, you know, I mentioned Mike before, Mike Schmidt, and I've met some other people through the Internet, you know, like Nick Renato. We talk every once in a while. Pat Cohen, who's a big deer hair guy. We talk about streamers and stuff. We share ideas. I just met another guy through the Internet named Matt Grajewski, who's a big streamer guy. There's other guys out there who I see other things from, Tommy Lynch, Alex Lafkas, other names like that. And I think we all kind of borrow from each other. Obviously, Kelly, Bob, you know, Russ Madden, there's a slew of names, Eli Barrett. I think we see things or we see bits and pieces, me personally, of certain flies from other people, and then we may take a little piece of that and add it to something we might have an idea with. Or a lot of times with me, whether it's even any kind of fly, a lot of the flies that I kind of concocted or came up with were based upon trying to solve a riddle. You know, and this doesn't just delve into streamer design, but it delves into matching hatches and bugs and things. You know, there could have been a day out when I was out on the river where, you know, I walked away kind of scratching my head and, you know, how am I going to solve that riddle? And that's how I kind of base some of my fly design and streamer design too. You know, what I'll try and do with some of the rivers that I fish is kind of get a general idea of, you know, what are some of the major food forms that these fish are chasing? You know, and then I'll base my fly design from there, which that kind of like answers that question. And we can talk about materials and stuff as we go, I suppose. So.
Sure. Well, Malcolm asked from Toronto and a couple other people as well about, you know, what are articulated flies? You know, we kind of alluded to that with Kelly Gallup. And what's the advantage to using them? So you want to explain that for those that aren't familiar with articulated design?
Absolutely. Articulated flies are merely just a fly that has some sort of a joint in the middle of it that's going to create a little bit more movement. It's going to allow you to use a shorter hook or a series of hooks or a shank in a hook to achieve a larger fly without having to use a longer hook. Because let's face it, we have limitations on how much we can tie it to a certain hook based upon how long the hook is, the dimensions of the hook. So by articulating it, we can add several hooks or shanks or whatever to a fly to make the fly larger, especially if we have to imitate, you know, some sort of larger prey, or we're looking to get more movement out of it. I know Kelly talks about it in his book about when he got into the whole idea of articulating flies was trying to imitate the jointed Rapala, which is a very famous lure amongst gear fishermen. And the action out of the Rapala is deadly. You've got that joint in the middle, and it makes that particular lure swim. So articulated flies essentially solve a couple of riddles. They allow you to build larger flies without the limitation of one hook, and they also allow you to create movement into a fly. So if you have some material that you've built into a pattern that doesn't have a lot of fluid movement to it, you can actually add movement to it by articulating it.
Okay. And a question from Lee in Sandy Hook, Connecticut was, why use the articulated streamers versus traditional? Is it for that movement?
Yeah, a lot of it is for the movement. You know, let's face it, a lot of the patterns that are successful and a lot of patterns that I like to fish have movement built into them regardless of whether they're articulated or not. And I think any kind of fly you have that has some sort of inherent motion in it, even when it's not being manipulated, it can be, you know, equated to a trigger. It may induce a strike. And the advantages of, you know, having when to use an articulated streamer versus a traditional, that's kind of a matter of a preference, in my opinion. It's kind of a choice of mine. I do it because I enjoy it. I get a little bit of satisfaction out of knowing that I can fool a fish on a larger pattern. Usually the takes out of it from a fish is usually pretty violent. But I think the biggest attribute that helps as opposed to a traditional style fly is you've got more movement out of a jointed fly as opposed to something that's on one solid hook. So I think that's probably the biggest reason why you would probably want to fish it over another. And also you have to kind of take into consideration every river and place that you fish has regulations on it. So you may have to, if you're a tire, you may have to abide by them accordingly. You know, some places you can't have two hooks in your flies. You may have to, you know, substitute one of those hooks with a shank. There's a lot of different ways you can articulate flies, too. So,
when you say a shank, is that something that you make yourself, or do those exist? Can you purchase them?
Both, actually. You could make a shank out of by simply cutting the bend off of a hook, and the straight portion where the eye of the hook from where the bend cuts where you've cut off is equate to a shank. That's probably the first way that people kind of have known about it. A couple of companies actually sell and market shanks. Partridge has had them. They have what they call a Waddington shank, which is probably known pretty well amongst a lot of the steelhead guys and salmon fishermen. And then Flyman Fishing Company has a series of shanks out there now that are built on stainless wire. And then they come in a bunch of different sizes. They have them from small to medium to large. I think they go from like 20 millimeter, 35, 45, up to 55 millimeter. So you can actually substitute those instead of, you know, cutting off the bend or the point on your hook and, you know, kind of throwing your money out the window. So
that your preference then is to use these pre-manufactured shanks?
Yep. I mean, some of the streamers that I tie to, the one streamer I tie called the Hog Snare, it's got a funny name, it's a triple section fly, and it has two articulations in it. And the middle section is built on a shank so that I have to sacrifice a hook for it. And the beauty of it, the way the Flyman shanks are set up is they have a regular eyed end, which you would slide to, you know, for tying on where you would tie your tippet on. And then the other end is offset by 90 degrees, and it has an open loop on it. So you could either slide a hook on it, or for some of the guys that like the swing flies, you could tie a trailer off the back, and then you could secure that down with your tying thread. So they give you some options with it. And the beauty of it is you could actually loop that through the back hook, which is what I do on that one particular streamer. And then I use some wire and some beads for the front articulation point. So you have some options there.
Okay. George in Alabama wanted to know, is there any acoustical effect that you get from articulated streamers?
I would think so. I mean, you know, anytime you have more movement in a fly, you're going to send out waves in the water. So it's all going to also depend, too, not just with the articulation and the way that fly swims in the water column, but also the other materials you may have built into the fly. Now, I know Gary Borger talks about acoustic footprints a lot in some of his articles that he's written, and there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, obviously, some fish have lateral lines, and they use that lateral line to track down their prey. And, it can be visual for part of George's thing, but I think the acoustic part of it is all dependent upon how that fly is constructed. If it's a fly that's built that has a very broad footprint, I would say it'd be more acoustic than visual. You know, if it's a pattern that's built off a lot of materials like, say, marabou, things that are going to collapse or they're going to pulsate when they're paused or stripped through the water column, then it might be more visual. So it could be a combination of the two.
Okay. Walt in California wanted to know if, considering that the presentation is equal, do you consider an articulated streamer to be a superior fish getter to a non-articulated one?
You know, that's kind of a broad question. I mean, it depends. I mean, it all comes down to the angler. I don't think any pattern is a better producer than another if it's successful, because we all have our own patterns that we have a lot of faith in for a lot of different reasons. You know, I mean, you may have a lot more success in a pattern than somebody else does just because you may fish it more. So that's kind of a tough question to answer. I think where kind of goes back to that last question we had there about, you know, non or articulated versus traditional style flies. I think it kind of goes hand in hand with that. I mean, if you're really looking for a fly that's going to have more movement out of it, you're going to have a heck of a lot more movement out of a fly that's jointed as opposed to a static single hook pattern. So I don't think there's any superior is kind of a big word to put to a fly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it depends. I mean, it's too broad of a question, really.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to measure those sometimes. You know, even with presentation being the same, you know, there are other things in effect, too. You know, the clarity of the water, you know, sunlight, is it cloudy, is it not? Are you getting reflections off the materials, that kind of thing? Are you fishing deep? So there's a lot of different variables, I would think. Yeah, Mark Thompson in Georgia wrote in. He says, Rich, this is Mark with a Team Trout Slayer. I don't know if that makes any connection with you.
But, yeah, I think
so. Okay. Articulated flies are illegal in competitive fly fishing, but the articulation of patterns, as we know, is extremely effective addition to the fly. What types of materials, feathers, tanned hides, et cetera, have you found to give the best motion in water regardless to the natural articulation of the pattern without needing to add the body section? So I guess what he's saying is, you know, if I don't go articulated, what are the best materials to get the same kind of motion effect with the traditional string?
Yeah, there's a bunch out there, really. I mean, you know, you hear me talk about marabou. Marabou is an awesome material. You know, it has some limitations because, you know, not every marabou plume is the same. But the fibers in marabou are they move a lot in water regardless of whether you are actually imparting motion to your fly. So marabou is definitely one type of material that if you're going to be limited to fishing flies, as Mark is with his competitive fishing, you know, marabou is something you're definitely going to want to incorporate into some of your patterns. There's some other things that I like too. You'll see in a lot of the fly patterns that I fish in regards to streamers, I use a lot of Arctic foxtail. I like Arctic fox for a lot of reasons. It's got some qualities like marabou. It's a little bit stiffer. It breathes a lot in the water. I think one of the characteristics you want to look at in a material if you're tying stuff, especially when it comes to streamers and you're looking for that inherent motion, is materials that will breathe and materials that won't necessarily just collapse. You know, marabou will collapse. You have to obviously use some other materials behind it so you can maintain a profile or shape, which you'll hear me talk about. But if that material has a lot of motion built into it, even when it's static in the water column without you having to impart motion to it, I think that's a huge asset. There's also some synthetics out there that kind of achieve that in a similar way. A lot of guys are starting to use like craft fur nowadays because it's a little bit more readily available. It's a synthetic product. It's kind of in between fox fur and marabou. I think marabou and fox fur have some characteristics that craft fur doesn't possess. Another one would be rabbit. I mean, rabbit strips are fantastic. Rabbit has lots of motion in it. Fin raccoon. You know, the thing with rabbit strips, too, and you'll hear guys talk about when they fish a lot with rabbit, is if you tie any kind of a fly pattern that's got rabbit in it, plus the rabbit hide, which most rabbit strips have that, they can be very cumbersome if you have an excessive amount of rabbit hide on there because they get waterlogged really easy, and they can be kind of difficult to cast for some people. There's ways around that. You can trim the hide out and spin the fur itself into a type of a dubbing loop. You'll hear me talk about that a lot when I tie. I do a lot with a lot of my fly patterns. I do a lot of dubbing brushes and things of that nature because I can subtract certain parts of the material that probably aren't that beneficial and only use what I really need just spun into that thread while also making them more durable at the same time. So those are some of the things.
interviewed Denny Rickards about stillwater fishing. He used a lot of seal fur. I think one of the flies was a seal booger he created.
Yep.
And that was all about that movement, that something that makes the fly look alive. Like you said, even if it's not moving, you know. And I think that was a secret with his seal booger. Is it's really effective in stillwater, but it gives that you know, the notion that this thing would, and it doesn't really, it's not a really match the hatch kind of thing. It doesn't really match anything. It just looks alive, you know, and
right.
Very effective. Yeah, very effective. Have you used any seal fur in any of your patterns?
A little bit. You know, I really big, I just like the properties of, I found some really good suppliers of, you know, and then back to the Arctic fox. I mean, Arctic fox, there's a big difference between body fur and tail fur. You hear me specifically talk about tail fur. Tail fur is a little bit stiffer. It's got more of, I guess they're kind of like guard hairs in it. There is some of the underfluff, but it maintains its shape a little bit better, but it still breathes. Whereas body fur is very, very soft, almost like as soft, if not softer than rabbit. So when you tie with Arctic fox body fur, if you don't have something behind it, if you're building a streamer that you want to maintain a broad profile with, this stuff will kind of collapse on you, as will our craft fur. So whereas the tail doesn't, it's got a little bit more body to it. So, and I like the properties of the fox tail because I can generally get it in a little bit longer lengths, which is key for some of the streamers that I like to tie and fish.
Sure. We need to take another quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about color and how that plays a role in the fly design. So stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinclaw. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rich Strolis about streamer strategies. So if you'd like to ask Rich a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible tonight. Okay, Rich, question from Colby in Logan, Utah. Says, do you agree with Kelly Gallup about color being one of the most important aspects of streamer design?
Yeah, 100% agree with him on that. I think for a person who fishes a lot of different rivers, I think on any given day, depending based upon a lot of different variables, whether it's weather, water color, you know, time of day, a color is a huge part of it. And then if you really delve into this even more and you have a river that you fish frequently, you'll start to notice patterns. And there'll be definite times when certain colors will outperform others. And I base a lot of my fly box off of, some of my streamer boxes are kind of a mess right now from last season, but when I put together my streamer box, I have my confidence patterns, and I like to have them in a variety of different colors, because a lot of times it's not so much the style of fly, the color has more to do with it than anything. And the orientation is to where I'm fishing them in the water column, which goes back to, you know, whether I'm fishing with a sinking line or a floating line, but that's another topic we can talk about later. But the color is huge. I absolutely agree with him 100%.
Yeah, I remember when I interviewed him, and I can't remember the timing on this, but I think it was something like, you know, he'd throw a black streamer out there, and if he didn't get any action within, you know, 6 to 10 minutes, then he was changing the color. And not necessarily the pattern, but the color. And he'd keep doing that until he got a hit. And then he'd stick with that color for a while. But he was changing up very often. I mean, he wasn't going a half an hour. You know, it was just a matter of minutes. And then, because he was so confident, I think, in the area that he was fishing and how he was fishing, that color was that important that he was switching up a lot. So,
what I think goes hand in hand with that, too, is I know for some of Kelly delved upon it more in his second video, but in his first video it was based a lot out of fishing out of a boat. And when you're fishing out of a boat, you also have to take into consideration you're moving a little bit more. So it's your chances to cover the same piece of water are not as good unless you're anchored up. So in that respect, I agree with him 100%. You know, if I'm floating down a river and I'm covering X amount of miles, then I'm probably going to switch up my colors a lot more frequently than I would be if I'm out there wading a stretch of river. So my approach when I'm wading as opposed to how I'm fishing out of a boat is completely different. I may not switch my colors up as quickly as I would out of a boat.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. There, we just got a question in on the internet. Brian in Dayton, Ohio, which kind of ties into this. He says, what factors do you use for fly selections to start your day, and do you normally size up or down if you aren't rolling any fish? So, and we really didn't address that, but I think there's some questions later on, but since we brought this up, when you go out, are you primarily fishing streamers? I mean, with that intent, or do you start out nymphing and then switch to streamers, or are you all out streamer fishing most of the time?
I'm all out streamer fishing. I've kind of, it's always had an affinity to fish streamers, but in the last couple of years, I'll be honest with you, I've put the nymph stick and the dry fly rod down quite a bit, and I'll just go out to target larger fish with streamers. So when I say it all comes down to commitment, that 100% committed, I'm all in or nothing. So when I go out there and I fish streamers, this is what I'm doing. That other stuff stays in the truck or at home. And when I start my day out, it's going to be dependent upon the water condition. So if I go out there and I start my day under normal conditions, I may start with, and I say normal, you know, we'll say my home river is the Farmington River, and it's like a few minutes away from my house. So if a normal flow on there, an average flow is anywhere from 300 to 500 CFS, and that river clears pretty regularly even after a heavy rain. So it's not gin clear, but it's like a tannin color. So what I have changed my thought process, if you asked me this question 5 years ago, I would have given you a different answer. I probably would have told you I'd start out with my sinking line set up, and I'd aggressively be fishing an unweighted streamer on a sinking line, whereas now it's a little different. I will start out with a floating line, and I will fish a weighted fly that's going to be on the bottom. And if that doesn't seem to produce or it's producing well, I will change it. I'll try something else. I always start with some sort of a natural color if the water's clear. And when I say natural, usually a base, if it's a new river I haven't been to, I try to learn a little bit about what the forage base is. But I'll usually try and imitate something that's similar to the color of the bottom of the river or dark. So that could be, considering the Farmington's typically tan, and it may be a brown or a tannish color, or 9 times out of 10, I'll start off with something dark olive black or a combination of those two. And then I'll go from there.
Question about, relates to color too. Sally in Manitou Springs, Colorado, asks, are streamers that look like baby fish more effective than other colors? I think she's going for more the natural. And you had just kind of talked about that, the color of the stream. That is that because the bait fish and so forth are similar color to
a lot of times they are. I mean, have you ever caught a fish? Here's a great example to think about. There's definitely some places in some rivers where there's color change, and that color change can be a place for a fish to reside because it gives them a little bit of security. Have you ever caught a fish where in one stretch of river it's lighter than another, and another stretch of river the fish are darker, and it's based upon their bottom? They kind of...
Sure.
Blend into their bottom a little bit. I've had fish where they've caught that one side of them was light and the other side was dark just based upon their surroundings. They were sitting right on the color change on the bottom. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said about that. You know, some of your forage fish may blend in a little bit better to their surroundings. When it comes to, this is kind of a two-part question too, I think, and this might answer two questions down the road here for us, but baby fish colors and other colors, if you look at a lot of the streamers that a lot of us are fishing now in terms of bigger stuff, they don't directly represent a specific bait fish pattern. A lot of them are crazy. I mean, you look at some of Kelly's flies. I mean, he's got some patterns in there that they got a little bit of this. Like they might have a little attribute of a crayfish in them, or they've got eyes on them like a bait fish, but they don't directly look like a bait fish. You know, and he talks about when he fishes his streamers, it's about that predatory response, the fight or flight thing, and it's you're trying to get a reaction of that fish. So I don't think that a lot of times, although there are some rivers in certain times of the year where you need to have a pattern that may be a little bit more specific to what the major food source is. You know, I know on the White River in Arkansas they have I think the shad or the alewife, I don't quite remember, but they have a shad kill there, I believe, and they have something similar to that up on the Delaware every spring, where the alewives, if we have a high water event, will get forced over the dam or through the turbines, and they're readily available to the fish, and the fish will key in on them at those times. Under those kind of circumstances, I'd say, yeah, you'd probably want to have something a little bit more like a baby fish. But more often than not, it's really not that important.
Okay. So. There was a study, scientific study done, and it took place down in the Caribbean with guppies. And these scientists went down there and took their stock from one source of guppies and then split them up and put these guppies, and this is a natural habitat, put these guppies in a sandy bottom water and one that had a lot of small different colored pebbles. And then they came back, and you know, guppies reproduce rather quickly.
Right.
But they came back, I think it was just a few years later, and then they sampled the guppies in these two waters, and lo and behold, the ones that were on the sandy bottom had little or no markings, they no spots, they were more smooth colored, and the ones on the pebbly bottom were much more marked up, spotted, and so forth. So just even within a few years, the fish started changing and adapting to their surroundings at the bottom so that they would blend in better with the bottom and be less, you know, noticeable to predators. So I thought that was pretty neat. So what you were just saying a few minutes ago about that, you know, has actually been proven scientifically over a period of time. So I thought it was pretty interesting.
It's crazy. I've caught fish like that where they're like half, one side of them is like one color and the other is darker. And it's, you wouldn't, you know, you don't really, it took me a while to kind of put that together. Maybe I'm a little slower than other people, but I was like, wow, why is this fish just two colors?
But I think, I think the sun has something to do with that, too, sometimes. If they've been sitting, getting hit by the sun all day long, on one side they'll lighten up, and the shady side gets dark, and then tomorrow it could be just the opposite. But another question about flies. Joe in Ohio want to know, you know, do you have a go-to fly for a streamer, the one you have the confidence in?
You'll hear me talk. I guess I'm a two-part guy because I'm kind of an extremist when it comes to my fishing. You know, obviously I'm carrying two different lines and stuff, but I have two flies that are my go-to flies right now. And I really do. I'd be lying to you if I didn't when it comes to streamers. One, if I'm fishing on a sinking line, it's going to be – I'm really had a lot of good success with that pattern I talked about before, the hog snare. It's a big, crazy fly. It's got a lot going on. If I'm fishing a sinking line, that's the first thing I'm throwing. If I'm going to be fishing a floating line, hands down, my best fly pattern in the last 18 months was the headbanger sculpin that I tie, which is basically, it's the same style of fly as the hog snare, except it's tied in reverse so that your hooks are inverted and it has a heavy sculpin head on it, so it gets down to the bottom. If I had two flies to fish all the time and you only gave me two to fish for streamers, those would be the two.
So those are your patterns?
Yep, those are two patterns of mine.
Okay. Now, I got to ask you this earlier, but usually I ask my guests about, you know, what's going on in their fly fishing world. And I know you have a website and videos. Are those available on your website?
Yes. There's over 100 videos on there now.
Good.
They run the gamut. I mean, I'd say 90% of them are patterns of mine, and then there's like another 10% or there's some household patterns on there. And they're basically put up there for the tire to kind of learn techniques and stuff. And, you know,
tell folks what your website is so that they can go check that
sure.
out.
It's www.catching-shadows.com. Make sure you put the hyphen in there or else you get a body shop out of California, I believe.
Yeah, I already did that once. Catching-shadows.com.
Yep. And
okay.
I've got it's kind of cool. I'm doing a really cool thing. I'm doing a year-long contest on my Facebook page. All you have to do is like it, and you're in the running for – I'm putting together a bugger beast right now, which is a kind of a suitcase for big streamers. And as the number of likes goes up on it, the number of flies I add to it. And I'm already up to about 17 articulated streamers in that box already. And so if you like the page and you like what's going on there, you put yourself in the running to win that box. And by the end of the year, it should be pretty full. And who knows, I might even offer a couple more. So.
Okay, good. So how do they find your Facebook page?
Just go right to that website, and there's a link on the right-hand side. You can't miss it, and you can click right on it and then go right to there, and you can like the page.
Okay.
And it's mostly fly fishing stuff. It's all – you'll probably see a lot of pictures on there of recent orders that I've tied up, or you might see a link to any one of the new fly tying videos I put out there.
Okay. Anything else you want to share with people about what you're doing in your fly fishing world right now?
You know, I kind of moved away from guiding. Like you heard earlier, I have a full-time job, and then I just do the commercial fly tying right now. I got a couple of pretty cool projects in the works, two of which I can't really talk about yet. You'll see more about it in the next few months on my website. Got some articles in the works. I'm actually helping out with a book, a chapter in a book in the Northeast for fly fishing in the Northeast. I've got that. And then my other friend I talked about before, Mike Schmidt, we're actually doing a collaborative presentation combining both of our thoughts and stuff and the things that we've learned on streamer fishing together. And we're going to be offering that all over the place starting this coming fall. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
Good, Well, we got a couple more questions. Thanks for sharing that with us about fly size. Michael Nolan in Melbourne, Australia, he says, is there an ideal fly size? How small can you go to pick up smaller fish while still catching the bigger ones? Or is it horses for courses? In other words, bigger flies for bigger fish.
You know, there's a little bit of truth to that's a two-part thing, too. I mean, you know, there's some days when you go out there, I think a lot has to do with the fish's mood, the conditions, how things are going on the river, because there's days when I'll go out there and I'll be throwing a 7-inch fly and I'll be catching 12, 11, 10-inch trout on it. I know with smallmouth, if you delve into some warm water stuff, I mean, sometimes you can't throw a fly big enough and you'll get fish that are smaller than the fly you're throwing. So, you know, the general thought process when I'm throwing larger stuff is to kind of weed out the smaller fish, but there are days when I think the correlation usually is when the water's up a little bit, the fish kind of let their guard down, they become a little more aggressive, and you'll start picking up fish that are smaller. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if the big flies, I always start big, and then if I have to, I'll taper back. So I always, it's that whole mentality of swinging for the fence. I go big to start with, and if that's not producing, then I may have to taper back, or I may, before I even change the size of my fly, I might change the way that I manipulate it in the water column.
We had two questions come in on the Internet here, right behind each other, both asking about tube flies. Are you using any tube fly designs?
Yeah, you know, there was a time probably about 4 or 5 years ago when I delved a lot with tubes. I don't typically fish a lot of tube flies during the day. Tube flies are great, though, because they take the limitations of a hook out of the whole equation, and you can make flies as big and large as you want. I use tubes primarily now when I night fish. I do a lot of, I used to, I haven't done as much in the last year or two, but probably going to get back into it, but I used to night fish a lot. And I used to like fishing tubes because the tube fly and the design, I basically could take any fly pattern and then make it as long as I wanted. And then based upon how long the tube is, and what style of hook I use, I could determine where I place the hook throughout the size of the fly or however that fly was designed. So sometimes when I'd be fishing at night with surface patterns that I might be swinging across the surface, if I had fish that were taking a lot of that were biting at the tails, I could build that fly and base where my hook was going to be placed on the fly closer to the rear end of the fly. So tubes definitely have a place when it comes to streamers. And the beauty of it is if you can put any kind of style of hook on there, and a shorter shanked hook, which is usually more beneficial when you're catching larger fish. You don't hit that levering action as you would from a longer shanked hook.
Okay. Another question on the Internet. Anthony in Half Moon Bay, California, wanted to know how small you tie the articulated flies. I mean, what's the smallest you go to do?
I'd say probably like the smallest one that I'm tying right now is like 3.5 inches. It's smaller. I don't sell as many of those. I don't really fish that many of them. A lot. The average size that I fish for an articulated fly is right around that 4.5-inch size to 6 inches. The smallest would be the 4.5-inch length. But I do tie a few that are smaller. I rarely fish them. Usually all big stuff.
Okay. Do you ever use rattles?
Yes, I do. I'm actually in the process. It's been a two-year-long project now where I've been trying to concoct just something a little different for a crayfish pattern, and I'm incorporating rattles in it. And I do use some rattles on a couple of streamers. I've done some custom ones with it. There's definitely something to be said about them. But I have to tell you, if you're tying with rattles too, there's some limitations on that too, because there's, you know, the larger rattles make a little bit more sound, but they also take up more space in your fly, so you have to accommodate that, and depending on how you put them into the fly pattern. So, and the rattle's only as good as how you move the fly, because if you put a rattle on a fly and it's not allowed to move freely, it's really not going to rattle. So you have to kind of take that into some consideration too. So,
okay.
Yes, I do.
That's Lee in Sandy Hook, Connecticut, want to know what are the best streamers for fishing large browns at night. So you said you used to do a lot of night fishing. Do you have some favorites there?
Yeah, I actually do. You know, I mean, there's for me, and this is, you know, my personal opinion from my experience. You know, I fish two styles. I fish a surface style fly, which is nothing more than a mother minnow that's been, I'd say, I call it on steroids because it's pretty much beefed up. It's a very, very large, and it's all black. It's a very oversized deer hair head with a deer hair collar, and I usually continue the rest of the body is either made out of marabou or bird fur. If you ever heard of bird fur, but it was a product that Whiting came up with as an engineered fly, or a feather rather, which is kind of like a cross between a spey hackle and marabou. It has the two properties of the two feathers combined together. It's a little tougher to get because they
don't Whiting.
Have yeah, you know, I don't want to knock Whiting because they do have some great stuff, but some of their really good stuff is hard to come by sometimes, and that's one product that, in fact, at the time when I could get it at last time, I bought like 50 pelts of this stuff, so I have quite a bit of it. That's how much I have faith I have in that one fly. And you can do the same thing with a combination of craft fur or marabou, but it's essentially a marabou mother, a little bit of flash, if you like, and an oversized deer head. I know some guys like to fish mice. A good friend of mine that I night fish with, we put the mouse against that pattern, and no offense to the mice guys out there, because I know there's a lot of them that like them at night, but that thing, hands down, 5-1 outfished it every time we've swung that thing across the surface. So that.
What do you call that again?
It's a bird fur streamer with a deer hair head. I don't even think we have a name for it. It's a pattern that me and my friend Mike kind of threw together one night, and it's just stuck. And then if we have to go underneath at night, it's in one of those sculpin style patterns work really well, or I fish a lot of, one of the patterns that I fish that I tie is called the Cellar Dweller. It's kind of a funny name. It's a heavily weighted, it's got a tungsten eye on it, but it's tied on a 60-degree flat-eyed jig hook, and it's meant to be fished off the bottom on a floating line. And I fish that, and I also modify it a little bit with one of those sculpin heads. That's another fly. One of my second largest browns I took at night off the bottom fell to one of those style of flies. So there's a lot to be said. Some nights you have to go underneath and not just on the top, so. Those would be the two streamers that I would pick for night fishing.
Okay, one more question about flies, then we'll dig into strategies and tactics here. And we've got a lot of questions on that. Paul in Colorado want to know, do you feel larger hooks are harder on the fish?
You know, it's something I've always thought about, because I've had, you know, a lot of the streamers that I fish and that friends of mine fish that we design, they all, especially the articulated ones, they're all built around the basis of the front hook is shorter but it has a larger gap on it. You'll see some of the hooks we use are Gamakatsu B10S. It's a stinger hook. It's got a much larger gap so that you can really build a heavily profiled head on it. Another one is the TMC, which is a popper hook. I think it's the 8089. I've heard stories from other people that were concerned. I know with smaller fish, because the gap is so big on it, if they take it deep, it may go through the roof of their mouth and it may go up into their brain. I've had stories of people tell me that. You know, they've felt like they've probably killed that fish as a result of it. Yeah, I think with smaller fish, that you definitely run some risk. But when you're talking about larger fish that are attacking these flies, I mean, we're talking fish that are measured in pounds, not inches. So I think it's less of an issue. You know, I mean, there's always a time when you may do something when you're fishing, whether you're fishing dry flies or nymphs or whatever, where you might have inherently hurt that fish, and it, you know, there's just nothing you can do about it. You know, I don't want to sound coarse, but it's the truth. You know,
I think
there's something to be said about that, but you know,
okay,
it is what it is.
So, do you have a particular system in place that you use when you fish streamers? And you've kind of talked about bits and pieces of it, but can you kind of put it all together for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I say tomorrow I'm going to go out on the river and we'll just throwing it out there. I start my day off before I even hit the river, and I take a look at my water conditions online. You know, we've got the internet at our disposal. You can go to USGS, figure out what the flows are. If you know your river really well, you know what your moderate flows are, what your high flows are. Check the weather, too. Weather plays a lot. You know, if we had heavy rains the day prior, how I'm going to go out there and start my day is going to be a little different than if we're in drought-like conditions. So that's going to be the first thing I do. If I get out to the river, like I said before, I'm always going to start off with a floating line unless the water's a little bit up and off color. Then I'm going to probably start with a sinking line. And how I start fishing, the beauty of fishing with a floating line and a weighted streamer is it's a very, very stealthy approach as opposed to throwing a piece of lead core or tungsten weighted line across the river. As you'll see, if you fish a lot with a weighted line, from my experience, after you throw a few casts through the same piece of water, your effectiveness goes down a little bit because, there's a lot of variables there. The fish could see the line, et cetera, whereas opposed to fishing with a floating line and a leader, you could throw multiple casts to different spots and be a little bit more stealthy with it as opposed to throwing that big piece of weighted line. So I will typically start with a floating line setup, and I will approach it a little differently than Kelly would. With a floating line, I can fish from downstream up into a gut, into a riffle. I don't have to necessarily be right in the position and fish diagonally across or slightly up and down. It gives me some more options. I can start from downstream, which, let's face it, if the river's flowing down, and the fish are typically facing up unless it's a back eddy, so I can be down below the fish. They won't even know I'm there if I'm wading fairly carefully. So the conditions are clear. I'll start with something more natural. I always start big and tailor it back. If the conditions are a little bit dirtier, then I may go with something that's darker or brighter in color. I don't know if there's a question on this later. I don't want to kind of jump ahead, but I'm always targeting my philosophy, like I talked about before, is, I'm not just going out for any fish. I'm going out for the fish. So I'm always thinking like that. Light conditions, from my experiences, have been something that's very important. You'll see I fish a lot, first light, last light. That's not to say that I haven't taken a lot of large fish in the midst of the day with high sun, because it is the case, but more often than not, a lot of the rivers I fish are heavily pressured. They get a lot of fishermen. There's a lot of man hours on the river every year. So I try to get out there before everybody else. When the light conditions are lesser, I think it gives you an advantage. You're the first crack. It's that old adage, the early bird gets the worm, I think sometimes holds true. You might have a very large fish that feeds primarily nocturnally or at night who might still have his guard down at first light, and you might have a first crack at him. So I try to put all the odds in my favor when I go out there, when I'm hunting larger fish, or like some of my friends call them, unicorns. So all those things kind of play. And that's my system. I start with that. And then if I have to, I don't switch my fly up as much, like I said before, when I'm wade fishing as opposed to when I'm out of the boat. And usually what I'll do is I'll just change the color a little bit on the same style of pattern before I completely change the pattern and the tactic. So hopefully that answered their question.
Okay, good, good. Chris in Brentwood, California wants to know, in what situations do you choose to dead drift and when do you retrieve? And he says, what about still water situations? I guess he's asking, what's your retrieve in still water situations with streamers?
Yeah, the only still water situations I deal with are usually still, assimilated with, or associated rather with rivers. So I don't do a lot of lake fishing, I'll be honest with you. I'm a river guy by heart. There are situations on the river the rivers that I fish that are very, very similar to still water. So, some of the pools that I may fish, maybe the way I fish a pool and the head of a pool and the riffle and the faster water are completely different. So I'll start with dead drifting. I usually start when I'm fishing any style of a streamer that's weighted on a floating line that's going to be meant to fish on the bottom. Some days I may start it off on a dead drift. And all that may be is I will put myself in a position on a fairly fast riffle that's shallow, we'll say, anywhere from inches up to 3 or 4 feet deep with a moderate speed. I may cast up river from my position into the head of the riffle, and as that fly, let that fly tumble across the bottom. Now, when I fish my floating line and my sink with a sinking streamer, I'm not only trying to stay in touch with the fly by retrieving some of the lines it goes, but I'm also watching the tip of my fly line. And Kelly talks about this a little bit in his second video when he starts delving into weighted flies and jig-style flies, because sometimes you may not feel the take. You may actually see something that happens with your line that's not normal, and that's going to induce you to do a strip set. So a lot of times when I fish under those types of conditions, I will start off by dead drifting and rolling my sculpin-style pattern off the bottom by just retrieving a little bit of line in and following that belly of my line with the tip of my rod as it traverses through the water column, because I always want to kind of keep in touch with it. So that's how I would start that. If it was in a still water situation, so say I kind of drop back, that pool has a deep gut, same scenario. I may cast across or upstream into it and let my fly sink. Now, there's a couple scenarios that I fish on some rivers that are below impoundments where they can go from feet to or inches to several feet deep, very, very deep, much longer than the leader that I'm fishing. And that's where what I talked about is I'm going to cast my fly up into the top of the hole, let the fly sink, retrieve some line as I go, but I'm going to really keep my eyes on the tip of my fly line, even if that fly line is burying into the water column, because sometimes that's when you're going to see, you know, the fly line, may stop. It actually may move upstream. That's what we call a clue. You want to strip set the line you might have a fish on. So, you know, how I fish those two scenarios is a little bit differently, but I'm always not just retrieving the fly, but I'm also watching my line because it's going to kind of give me an indication of whether or not there's something there. And I've talked to some people, like I told you, I'm not very well versed in still water situations because it's not something that I do often, but there are some situations on a river where I do that. I think you could probably assimilate that to a still water scenario.
Sure. What about Duke asks about managing depth when you're streamer fishing?
Yep, that's a good question. You know, it depends on the line you're using. You know, if I'm fishing with a sinking line, and you know, the way I fish with a sinking line and how I manage depth that way, as opposed to fishing with a floating line, are just two different ways. If I need to get my fly down a little bit, a lot of times, you know, Kelly talks about in his video in his book about, you know, it's not necessary for your fly to be on the bottom and all the time. And it's true. There's a lot of scenarios when you're fishing a sinking line when the fly is just getting below the surface, and the sinking portion is just giving it a little bit extra movement or breaking the film, whereas you may, it doesn't have to get right on the bottom. But when you're fishing with a weighted fly and a floating line, you may want that fly right on the bottom based upon the style of fly pattern you have. So the way I would assimilate or try to manage my depth would be different with the floating line. The floating line would just allow it to sink a little bit more, pull a little bit of line, the slack line in as I go, until I know that fly is on the bottom. And usually, if it's slower water, you're going to have to manipulate that fly with the fly line. If it's faster, you're going to have to stay in touch by just pulling a little bit of it in. If you're fishing a sinking line, you can change your depth by, you know, just mentally counting down in your head. You know, if you cast across into a piece of water, you could put an upstream end in it that'll help let the fly sink a little bit. You know, and count in your head, you know, 1,001, 1,002, and get the different depths. But you'll see, not all the time it has to be right near the bottom, or you have to really worry about different depths. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But how you would approach it with either setup would be a little bit different.
Sure. We've got lots of questions, and questions are coming in like crazy on the Internet.
Good. It's a
very popular topic. But we're going to have a tough time getting through them all. David in Toronto wanted to know, I'll just kind of paraphrase his question, but he talks about spin fishing versus fly fishing and how much more effective spin fishing can be. And he wants to know, is there something we can learn from the spin fishermen that we can take to the stream with fly fishing, you know, methods, presentation, and so forth, to be more productive?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a pretty bold comment 90% of the time. I would beg to differ on that. I think that's me personally, but I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show would say the same thing. No offense, Dave, but it's a great question. I think a lot of us kind of already have borrowed a lot from, you know, fishing gear and assimilated that or, you know, to fly fishing. You know, one of the major things that we're talking about right now is fishing weighted flies. You know, I mean, anything, whether it's fishing freshwater gear or saltwater gear, one of the most deadliest tactics or deadliest lure combinations is something that jigs, that up and down motion. You know, I mean, that's something that we've borrowed. Fly guys have borrowed from the gear guys, you know, and saltwater for stripers, I know from personal experience, you know, if you can't get them on a fly rod out off the Cape and you're out there in some deeper water and you can get a 1 ounce jig on the bottom and jigged off the bottom, it's a deadly tactic. And you know, I mean, Bob Clouser kind of popularized that with his Clouser minnow. So I think we kind of have already done some of that with some of the gear. And I think that's this kind of like the basis of my streamer class that I go over is, you know, hey, don't just think about this one thing. We're getting television here. There are more to streamer fishing than just fishing with an integrated sinking line and a weighted fly. There's other ways to do this to solve some of these riddles, which will produce when you under conditions that you don't think they normally would. So I think, you know, in jigs.
Don't you think too, with you know, spin fishermen and lures and so forth, that they're just covering so much more ground in the same amount of time?
Right.
I don't know that they're more successful, but they sure can cover ground more, you know, more ground in the same amount of time than we can.
I agree with you.
Success, yeah.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, I think that's where streamer fishing and lure-style fishing are very similar, because when you fish streamers, you should be covering a lot of water. I mean, and that's something that Kelly and Bob talk about in their book, you know. I mean, this isn't something where, you know, the worst thing you can do when you go out there, when I get onto my class, part of the class is we go out on a stretch of water and I show everybody how I would approach it and fish it. And I think as opposed to getting a bunch of people lined up with eight different guys with all their rods and we go out and we practice the techniques, you learn a lot more from it that way. So they kind of get an idea, hey, wow, I didn't realize you actually cover that much water in that amount of time. You don't really spend a great deal of time on an area unless it's got a lot of different structure and different things for me to cover, you know. And I think the worst thing you can do as an angler in that respect is to, you know, stay in one section of water and just beat it to pieces for hours on end. You know, you don't really learn much from it that way either, you know. So,
another question, Dave in Scotland. He said, last year we had a lot of rain and the rivers were full. I had a lot of success with streamers. However, I did lose a high proportion of the larger fish, 20 inches plus, which I thought were well hooked. I fish barbless, but I don't think that's the main issue. Would fishing faster and heavier lines make a difference?
That's
sounds
a pretty
like
broad,
getting unhooked.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming unhooked. I mean, you know, what I probably would ask Dave is, you know, if you're fishing some larger streamers, are they jointed or not? Are they single streamers? You know, what kind of hooks are they on? I would need some more to answer that because it could be a slew of different answers for that. You know, fishing barbless hooks on streamers, if you take any kind of pressure off that, off your fish, and you get any kind of slack in there and that hook is barbless and that fish is shaking its head, it's going to run the chance you're going to lose that fish. So there's a lot of variables there that Dave didn't really kind of play out for us in the question. So it could be a slew of different hooks.
With streamers, because you're using larger hooks with more leverage, does that cause more
absolutely
likelihood rather than
absolutely
a size 22, you know, mid?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it's kind of, there's two things, like two adages I could give you here. You know, I talked about how we design some of these articulated flies. We use a lot of stinger style hooks for the head and, you know, shorter shank, like three, no more than 4X long hooks sometimes on the tail, or two stinger hooks for it. You get less leverage on it that way. You know, you don't have a longer shank hook. It's been proven, you know, some of those 6, 8, 10X hooks, you put that in the mouth of a very large fish, it can actually lever out. And Kelly talks about that in a chapter in his book. And there's a lot of truth to that. So, you know, that kind of solved that riddle in that respect. That kind of goes back with the tube flies, too. I mean, a lot of those tube flies that are tied, the really long ones, they use a very shorter shank scud hook or scud-style hook or stinger-style hook at the end or wherever they're placed in the fly. You'll lose less larger fish that way. So it could be a million different answers to this. Depends on what kind of fly Dave's fishing. So there's just a few variables there.
Okay, let's try to cram a couple more questions. Try to keep your answers really short here.
Okay.
I'm really out of time.
Okay.
No, that's fine. It's just we're out of time, and I want to try to cram a couple more in here. Jim in White Plains, New York, wants to know about the best way to fish crayfish patterns in rivers. Any tips on that?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on the size of the crayfish pattern you're fishing. If it's larger, you definitely want to manipulate it like a streamer. If it's a smaller pattern, when I say smaller, under a couple of inches, you're probably going to want to dead drift that, keep that closer to the bottom. I mean, most of your streamers that are representing crayfish should be fished kind of closer to the bottom for the most part, because that's where a lot of them reside for a good part of their time in the water. I think one of the best things I can tell people is, you know, I always hear this adage that, you can't strip streamers fast enough or whatever, but when it comes to crayfish or any kind of streamers, I don't think it's so much how fast you strip, but I think it's how you manipulate it and, you know, whether you change your retrieve. So one of the most deadly retrieves for fishing any kind of a crayfish is, you know, a very long strip with a pause, and you accentuate the pause. And that's where, I mean, if you look at crayfish in the water column, when you spook one, they dart. And they dart and they pause and they dart and they pause. So I think that's kind of a trigger. It's something you should incorporate if you're going to be manipulating your crayfish patterns through the water column. So,
okay, I think you kind of answered Mike's question from Melbourne, Australia, about how critical is retrieve speed. So you're saying, you know, vary it, try different speed, and try to simulate what the live critter you're trying to imitate would be doing. Okay, well, I guess we're out of time. We still got questions on the Internet, and I apologize, folks, we didn't get to all your questions, but Rich really, really rammed through these things and gave out a lot of great information tonight, but we just can't get to them all. That's just the way it is. So anyway, we're going to do a few more things here to wrap up the show. Rich, stick with me because we're going to do some giveaways. We're going to give away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you've had some work in. And we'll be giving away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers. So stick with us, and we'll be right back to do just that. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses shared interest in fly fishing, fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of our show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away a few of our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. Now, if you didn't register yet tonight, it's too late now, but make sure you do it the next time that we do a show, because we're always giving away great things, and you don't want to miss out on the possibility of winning one of these great prizes. So let me clear my database here. And so the first prize we're going to give away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you are one of the winners tonight, we'll contact you after the show by email, get your information and so forth so that we can get you taken care of on your prize. So for that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, we've got Jim Kilburn in Colorado. Jim Kilburn. So, Jim, congratulations. And you now have a one-year membership. And if you already have one, we'll get that extended for you as well. So congratulations. Now we'll give away a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at AmatoBooks.com, AmatoBooks.com. And let's see here. Our winner there would be Walt Cole, Walt Cole in California. So congratulations, Walt, on getting that one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Fly Tying Journal by Amato Books. So congrats to both you folks. And let's see now. We need to give away the $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers. And Front Range Anglers is located in Boulder, Colorado. Of course, if you win this, you can either take it into the store if you're in the area or go online and place an order in their online store as well. So either way, you'll be able to redeem this. Okay, so we had tonight we talked about Rich had two go-to flies he liked. What were his two go-to streamers that he liked? And he couldn't decide on one. So let's see what we got here. Got waiting for the answers to come in here. We're still okay. We've got, let's see, one was for the sinking a hog snare, and the other one was floating headbanger sculpin. Are those the ones, yep. Rich? Or
that's
them. Okay.
Yep.
So we have Bill Plamondon and Sako Seiko Maine. So Bill, I know I destroyed your name, Plamondon, anyway. You're our winner, so you get that $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. If you will send me your contact information, name, and let's see, did you already give me your email address? If you did, you did. Okay, good. So we got you taken care of, and we'll have Front Range contact you and get you that certificate. So congratulations on that. Okay. Well, that does it for our giveaways tonight. Rich, we really appreciate you being on the show with us. It was so much fun to talk to you and learn about your experiences. And, boy, talking about a person that spends a lot of time fishing streamers, you sure do. So thanks so much for being with us. Yeah.
Anytime.
Sure. Well, we probably will be doing another show with Rich down the road, talking about a stream he used to guide, the Farmington up there. So that will be a very instructive show, and maybe we can get some of these other questions answered during that show as well. So that will be good. Hopefully all of you have found the archive on our website. If you haven't, there are a couple links to it on our homepage and links at the bottom of every page. In the archive, you're going to find all our past shows, over 160 shows now. You can search by any keyword phrase, by the name of a fish, by the name of a location, techniques, and so forth, and hopefully you'll find a bunch of information that that will interest you there. So have a great time exploring our archive, and I know you'll enjoy it. Our next broadcast will be on March 6th, and it'll be 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we'll be interviewing Mark Giacoba, and our topic for the show will be fly fishing Everglades National Park. Mark is a professional guide working the largest subtropical wilderness remaining in the United States today, the Everglades National Park. This truly diverse ecosystem ranges from open prairies of the glades, cypress swamps, freshwater ponds, brackish bays, rivers, creeks, numerous grass flats, an endless maze of mangrove islands that extend all the way to the open waters of the Gulf of Mexico. So listen in to hear how Mark makes sense of this vast fishery and the incredible fly fishing opportunities that are available there. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Keeney's Fly Shop, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. It's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.